When we last left our heroes, we were discussing issues involving risk, and we discussed different aspects of risk, parameters of risk, and we concluded discussing the question of a person, God forbid, of being in a situation where they risk their own life to save the life of somebody else. We discussed it based on the passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi, and that had ramifications, let's say, for organ donation, let's say live organ donation, where, as far as I can understand, every surgical procedure involves some level of risk, and the more invasive they are, the more risk that's involved. So the question becomes, how appropriate is it for a person, God forbid, who's in a situation where they are somebody's in serious need? So, for example, donating a kidney was where we ended off with the tshuva from Rav Ovadia Yosef, where there may be distinctions between different levels of danger. And he quoted, Rav Ovadia quoted in this tshuva from the Echav Adas, that there is a difference between a suffix hashokol and a ktsas suffix sakana. That there's a difference between putting a person's self in a major risk, a 50-50 chance, and versus something that's much lower. So as far as I know, the risk involved in donating a kidney for somebody who's healthy is not a 50-50 risk, otherwise nobody would do that. It's a much, much lower risk. So then maybe a person's not mechuyev, but it would certainly be a big mitzvah for someone to donate a kidney or something like that for another person. The same thing, it applies, and we pointed this out the last time, it's important to realize these halachas are equally true to every person, but they differ in terms of their application. Every person in the world is mechuyev to help other people live. It just happens to be that somebody who's a trained medical professional is in a better position to do that than I am, because I'm the least medically inclined person, but that application exists everywhere, and everybody needs to think about that. We mentioned last time this person, Rahman al-Islam, who went in to save some children who were drowning in Lake Michigan, and he himself, I think he was from Highland Park, and he was in Michigan, he was vacationing, he was a doctor, and he drowned. So that's a terrible tragedy, Rahman al-Islam. It's a terrible tragedy, but he was doing a tremendous mitzvah by trying to be matzal nefashas, by saving their life of these children, which he did, but you know, it came at his own cost. The same thing, if a person is an ambulance driver or works in the paramedic corps, they're going to engage in some level of risk. Every doctor does. When treating patients, some patients have communicable diseases, so by definition, you're taking some level of risk upon yourself. But we understand that this risk that all these physicians are taking, they're taking upon themselves, a measure of risk for the purpose of saving other people. So that was the background, that's where we left off. So what we're going to talk about tonight is specifically involving risky medical procedures, but we're going to begin just with a continuation of somebody who's healthy we didn't quite get to last time, which has to do with vaccinations. So there is an article on this topic in one of the recent Chakira journals, where Rabbi Usher Bush discusses some scenarios that happened on the East Coast of parents who didn't want to vaccinate their children in the Orthodox community. Now, apparently, this goes back to a Lancet research, published research many years ago, that had a link between autism and certain vaccinations. That Lancet study has been debunked. They have issued a retraction, and the person who, the chief author of that study, has actually been barred from practicing medicine in Europe, in Great Britain, I should say, where he was practicing. But there became this stigma that people thought that if people would, God forbid, develop autism, their children would develop autism if they vaccinated. So it became a thing about vaccinations. So some people will say, wait a second, I'm perfectly healthy right now. Why should I get a vaccination? In fact, some vaccinations carry some level of risk, a minute level of risk, and we'll come back to this. Remember last time we spoke about Shomer Psalm Hashem, that you're allowed to take on a small limit, just crossing the street has a little level of risk. But it's interesting that Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, the author of the famous Mishnah commentary called Teferis Yisrael, lived in the 1800s, he speaks about vaccinations, and that you'll see on page 19, which is the first part of tonight's packet. So this is in his commentary on the Mishnayos in Yuma. In Maseches Yuma, that's where we deal with. I'm on page 19. In Maseches Yuma, that's where the Gemara discusses the laws of Pikuach Nefesh, about saving lives. And he talks about here in the Teferis Yisrael, he wrote two commentaries. On the bottom, you see in the Mishnah, called Teferis Yisrael, his name is Yisrael, Yochin and Boaz. If you remember, in the Beis HaMikdash, in Shlomo HaMelech, he built two pillars. One was named Yochanan, and the other one was named Boaz. So that's the name of his commentary. So he says the following. On the left-hand side, where I put the little underline in the Gimel, Umizeh nirali heter la'asos. Everybody see where I am? In the Gimel, on the left-hand side, in the Boaz. Heter la'asos. Can anybody pronounce that Yiddishized word? That's it. How about that? That's what it says. Inoculation. Shell. What do you think that one says?
Pockin.
Close. Pockin. Pox. Yiddish for smallpox. Pockin. How about that? So he says, what's the din if you're living? And again, in those days, inoculation was the same like it was today. Today, inoculation has a very, very, very low risk of any endangerment. But in those days, it was a little bit more risky. So Tiferes Yisrael was wondering, what's the halachic status of inoculation against pakin, against pox? Af she'echad me'elef meis al yedei ha-inoculation, even though 1 in 1,000 dies because of the inoculation, in those days it wasn't so safe. Al kolponim, nonetheless, she'im yishavu bo hapakin hativiyim, if a person gets these pox, which I assume means smallpox, then hasakana krova yoser, then the sakana is much closer, lachen rashai, it is permitted, lahaknis es atzmo bisakana rechoka, kede lahasil es hatzil es atzmo bisakana krova. It's permitted to put yourself at a small risk so that you will eventually save yourself from a much greater risk. So we moved from saying that it's permitted to jump into the river to save somebody who's drowning, you're putting yourself at risk to help somebody else. So says the Tiferes Yisrael, and we'll see a much more developed idea here, that you can endanger yourself by getting this vaccine, this inoculation, for the purpose of avoiding the much bigger potential danger down the road. And this is, you know, whether he quotes in the article from Poskim in the East Coast, Poskim from Israel, who either say it's an obligation to vaccinate your children or it's extremely highly recommended. I can't think of any reason why a person would not inoculate their children. Is there any medical reason why somebody should not get a vaccination today?
Unless they have an allergy.
Okay, unless they have an allergy. Otherwise?
Depends on the vaccine. Some of the live virus vaccines you have to avoid or defer for a while in case of compromise or something.
Okay. So you have to know what the medical state of the person is before they would get that vaccine. But other than that, they should get a vaccine, I assume, right? So then the question...
There's another issue with vaccines, which is the public health.
Oh, perfect. So that's just a perfect segue. I was just going to say, the second half of his article is, let's say you run a school. Is it permitted to say we won't accept any children in our school who won't be vaccinated? So that's a separate issue. That's a public policy issue. But he quotes, there was a case in a camp in the Catskills where they had some kids who got one of, I forget whether it was measles, mumps, rubella, whatever it was, one of those, and other kids in the camp caught it, and parents were upset. So the question becomes, then it's a public policy issue. Can you actually deny entry to your school or your camp or your playgroup kids who are not vaccinated?
On today's news, the Chicago public school system said that they will bar kids
who are not vaccinated because they don't want that liability. So this brings us...
You got a lot of people, though, who claim that they don't do it for religious purposes, like in a Jewish school.
Yeah, so that argument's not so...
Like,
that's not Ois Gehalten anymore. So that brings us to the real topic for tonight, which is this story. This was actually on page 20. I just gave it to you, so you should have it for your files. This was a very, very sad case that appeared in the Israeli Supreme Court, known as the Bagatz. And it was this family that was suing the Misrad HaBriyut, the National Institute of Health in Israel, because they had, Rachmana Litzlan, a person in their family who was dying of a terrible illness, and they were seeking permission to utilize experimental treatments. And these are treatments that were not, they were not sanctioned by the Ministry of Health, and they had potential hazardous risks that weren't checked out yet. And so they actually went to the High Court, and the High Court actually ruled against the family not to allow them to use this experimental procedure for this person. And this touched off, this was in 1982. You can get this online. Bakasha la'asher tipul b'chola sartan b'takshir sheterem ushar l'shimush. The permission, the request for permission for tipul, for use of a drug or treatment in a chola sartan, a cancer situation, b'takshir, with a method, sheterem ushar l'shimush, that was not yet permitted. So they basically had given up hope on this patient, and they said they want to try something radical. And the Ministry of Health said, no, it's too dangerous. And they protested to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, they say, belave kaved, with a heavy heart, on January 24th, 1982, they deny the request of this family. So
this just happened in the United States like a month ago.
In
Houston.
In Texas. I saw that. I think it was a Jewish
family.
And they, what ended up happening?
They petitioned
the White House.
The White House to allow
I saw
them
to
use unorthodox sort of treatment from a guy who, you know, in the medical world is generally known to be somewhat of a charlatan.
Uh-huh.
But they were desperate. Their child was dying.
And what happened? I didn't hear the end.
Obama said pretty much the same thing. The White House pretty much said the same thing, which is, with a very heavy heart, this is a tragedy, but we have to say no.
So,
child just died.
He did.
2 weeks ago.
Right. Dynamis.
But even with that, there were emails going out from various rabbis in Israel and elsewhere about, because they were asking for 100,000 people to sign up for the White House
petition.
And initially, you know, this was widely publicized, and then people started saying, like, maybe we shouldn't be encouraging our community to help this family. We're just leading them down this road that scientifically is invalid.
So this became a big discussion, and it is actually a long-standing discussion in halachic literature, huge halachic literature, which is the main topic we want to talk about tonight. Rachman al-Litzlan, a patient is ill, and they have some kind of very serious, maybe we call it terminal illness, but they can undergo a procedure that is a risky procedure. It may lengthen their days, and it may, you know, it may not, it may kill them on the spot. So what's the status of such a risky procedure in halacha? The truth is that someone recently showed me, maybe there's one of the earliest sources appears in the Torah. Because Yaakov Avinu says to the children, don't take Binyamin, pen yikra'enu ason. Maybe a disaster will happen to him. And finally, he relents. And Rashi there in Bereishis, the Rashi is in Perek Mem Gimel Pasuk Ches, I didn't put it in the packet. Rashi says, Yaakov Avinu makes a cheshbon. He says, you know what, I'll let Binyamin go down, because if we stay here, what's going to happen? We'll die of starvation. At least if he goes, even though there's danger on the road, it's better to take the risk of more short-term death and have the potential long-term benefit. This is most sharp in a story that appears on page 21 in your packet. And it's the story of the four lepers, the Arba Mitzorayim. The Gemara tells us that this story is very important, not just from a hashkafic point of view, but also from a halachic point of view. I'll just summarize it outside. It's the seventh chapter in Malachim Beis. There were four lepers who were standing at the gate in Shomron. And they said, what are we going to do here? If we stay here, the verse says in verse 3, Ma nachnu yoshvim po ad masnu, we're going to sit here and we're going to die. There was a famine, there was a starvation going on. Rather, let's get an idea. Im yashavnu po v'masnu, if we stay here and die, va'ata now, l'chu v'nipla el machane aram. Let's give ourselves up as POWs to the Arameans who were encamped outside the gates of Shomron. They were the ones laying the siege to starve the people. So they say, let's give up. If they kill us right away, okay, they kill us right away. But if they keep us alive, we're going to last much longer, because right now we're going to die of starvation. And what was the end of the story? So the end of the story is a great story. The story is, they come, and God provides a miracle for the whole community, that there was a kind of a noise, and the Arameans thought there was coming to chase them, so they ran away, and they left the whole camp with food and everything, and they say, let's go tell the people inside. They come, and they tell the king. The king first thinks it's a trap. And they send a few people out, and lo and behold, it's not a trap. So here you have an interesting scenario. You have people who are, maybe we could categorize them as terminally ill. They're going to die in a couple of days. And they figure, let's make the following cheshbon. Let's give ourselves up. Maybe they'll kill us today. In those days, the Geneva Convention wasn't enforced, so POWs weren't treated quite as nicely as they would be in American POW camps. But they figure we might as well take the risk. And the Gemara picks up on this story. And this was the first time. A lot of this year is going to be, we'll get to Tshuva that Rav Shechter Shalita. The first time I heard this topic was a Parsha Shir in Parshas Metzora, because this is the Haftorah for Parshas Metzora. So he gave a whole discussion about medical halacha. I was like, I never knew that. And the Beferish Gemara in Avodah Zarah on page 22. Om Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan taught the following teaching. Sofek chai, sofek meis. You have somebody, they might live and they might die. Then, ein misrapin mehen. You may not take healing from them. Who's them? This is Maseches Avodah Zarah. It's referring to idolaters. Why can't you go to an idolatrous doctor in Talmudic times? The same reason you can't go to an idolatrous barber in Talmudic times. Any Talmudic idolater with a razor or a knife or a pair of scissors is a dangerous situation. The Gemara, the Mishnah has a concern, a very real concern, that if they have the chance, they'll kill you. So you know what? If you're in doubt, don't go to them. But, says the Gemara, Vadai meis, if you're for sure, if someone's for sure going to die, misrapim mehem, you can seek out that doctor. Now, the Meiri points out, just to keep in mind, this concept of Gentile doctors and Gentile barbers, the Meiri says, does not apply today because we have, besides the fact that we have licenses that could be revoked, but we also have different kinds. We don't have pagans, wild, unethical pagans. We have people who are upstanding citizens. They might be Muslims, they might be Christians, they might be who knows what they are, but it's no problem today to go to a non-Jewish doctor for many reasons. But in Talmudic times, it was not advisable. So the Gemara asked the following question. Wait a second. Ha'ika chaye sha'a. This is an important term, but isn't there chaye sha'a, the life of an hour? A person, God forbid, has a terminal illness. He's vadai meis. But if he goes to the goyish, wild pagan, he's going to kill him on the spot. The Gemara is concerned. So how can you go to that doctor? You're going to lose your chaye sha'a. You're going to die immediately. So the Gemara says, l'chaye sha'a lo chayshinan. We don't worry about chaye sha'a, the short time that the person may live. We don't worry about that. How do you know? Umina temra. How do you know? You don't worry about that. Dichsiv, as it says in the pasuk, im amarnu, if we say the lepers, navo ha'ir, let's go to the city, v'hara'av ba'ir v'masnu. We go in the city, we'll die from starvation. V'ha'ika chayisha. How can you go to the Aramean camp? You can live for 3 days without food. El alav, l'chayisha lo chayshinan. You're not concerned about that small period of time. You're better off risking that chayisha, that small window of life. You don't have to worry about it. So this luchora seemingly is a good model for us. That a person has a finite amount of time, I'll have to define what that is, they can risk that for the benefit of what we'll call chay olam. Now, Tosfos makes a very important point here. This does not mean that we don't think that every life and every moment of life is precious. Tosfos points out, and we're not going to see it inside, but I underlined in the top, what does it mean? The Gemara in Shabbos says, let's say, God forbid, a building collapses. So you have all the paramedics and the Hatzolah and the fire department, they all come and they start taking out the bodies. It's a rescue mission. What if somebody who collapsed in there is going to die in a very short time? They're not, for some reason, you know, they're not going to live for a very long time. The Gemara says, doesn't matter. You can be Mechal Shabbos even for a short period of time. So Tosfos gives the answer. He says, I'll tell you why. On the third line, it says, V'ha'cha v'hasam avdina l'tovaso. In both cases, you do it for the person's benefit. In the case in Shabbos, if you let him sit under the rubble, he's going to die now. If you take him out, at least it'll give him a couple more days. In this case, the guy is benefiting by risking the immediate forfeiture of life for the potential long term. So don't walk away from this thinking, well, the Gemara doesn't care about, you know, a person lives 3 days longer, is 3 days shorter. No, the Gemara does care. But the Gemara is very carefully making a calculation, and this is what's going to start going into play. How to calculate Chai Sha and Chai Olam, because I think that this is really the issue that we're talking about. How do you weigh Chai Sha and Chai Olam?
Yeah. Risky procedures if there's a potential that you can live longer.
Exactly.
Even if it's very risky.
Well, that's the question. Right now, so far we've defined, we haven't even defined, we know there's chai sha'a, which you're going to give up on. This person would give up on their temporary life for some greater benefit. Well, we don't know. All we know in this case is you have a murderous barber or doctor and a person who is vadai mace, for sure going to die. So the question is, what are the parameters? So let's look at that now. Let's look at four case studies. Page 23. This, by the way, is codified in the Shulchan Aruch on page 23. Kol maka v'choli sheish bem sakana. In the middle, this is Shulchan Aruch Yoredea Kuf Nun Hei in the Laws of Idolatry. Any dangerous illness, sheish bem sakana, that has a sakana, shemachal leim ala Shabbos, ein misrapim me'ovid kochavim, she'ein o mum chel rabim. You can't go, this says so we should count Sfira. We'll count Sfira after Maariv. Okay?
Okay.
Let's not forget. You can't go to this goyish doctor if he's a pagan, if he's not a mumchel rabim. If everybody knows he's licensed, then you're not worried he's going to kill you on the operating table just for fun. Okay. However, why the chayshin al shvichas dam? We're worried he's going to kill you. But if you're definitely vadai meis, then misrapim. So let's look at one case study. Look on the bottom. This is Reb Shlomo Eger in the Gilyon Maharsha. So he's living in the 19th century. He says the following. Umikan, you see where I put the arrow on the bottom in Reb Shlomo Eger? So he says, on the end of that column, in the not-so-big letters, Umikan Danti. In this case, I was learning. Alma Shinishalti, and what I was asked, Bechole, in a sick person, Sharofe Omar, the doctor said, Litain lo lehaki. To give him some kind of medicine, what is lehaki? To vomit. Va'omar, and he said, Shim lo yo'ilo hasamim, if the drugs don't work, Yomus miyad, he'll die right away. Ve'im yo'ilu yisrape, and if it works, he'll be healed. V'ulam, however, he says, im lo yitin lo lahaki, if he doesn't give him the drugs to throw up, to vomit, vada yomus achar zman ma, he will definitely die after a period of time. Achar kach matzasi sheposa kein b'shuvus shvus Yaakov. He says, after that, I saw this psak in the shvus Yaakov. What was the halacha? He said it was permitted. Why is it permitted? For the same rationale. The person is going to live only zman ma, but if he takes this drug, he may live longer, even though it has the risk, then he might die on the spot. Similar question was asked, you can go two pages later to the Chachmas Adam of Avram dancing in page 25. I just gave you the rest of the Shulchan Aruch, so you can look at it later. Similar question, an Ayin Gimel, not Ayin Beis, go to Ayin Gimel. A Chole She'ela, he's living in Lithuania in the 18th century. Chole shetak detakif le alma. His person, the sick, is terminally ill, very sick. Verofim mumchim omru shu'la achar yir. She's beyond hope. Ubevada yomus. Rak shirotzim linasos. They want to try, to experiment. Litein lo refua, to give him some kind of healing. Va'az yochol lio sheyichye. He may live, or efsha she almost take it, for he might die on the spot, im mutter, and says, nira li de mutter. He says, I think that it's permitted, based on the same line of logic. Perhaps one of the earlier sources, on the next page in 26, this is actually in Hichos Goses, the Pisrei Tshuva, which is an important collection of earlier, a compendium of earlier sources on the Shulchan Aruch, quotes from, I put in the underline here, Ayin B'tshuvas Shin Beis Vav Yud. That's the Shvus Yaakov of Yaakov Reisher, who was asked also, Odos Chola Shu Mesukan Lomos, a sick person who is nearing death, V'chola Rofen Miyashin Oso, Shavada Yomos Achar Yom O Yomayim. He'll die in a day or two. This case, he's going to die in a day or two. Ach omrim sheyesh od refua achas. One more hope. She'efer sheyesh rapi. Maybe he'll get better. V'gam efshel lehefach. Maybe the other way. And in that case, I said, he paskins veheshiv af devadai chayshin l'shchayisha. Even though in general, we are concerned about a person's short life. That's why it's in Hilchos Goses. A person who's on the edge, you're not allowed to move the person because you might hasten his death. But he says, in this case, because you have the benefit of potential long-term, he says it's mutter. And similarly, we're not going to see it inside. In the next page, in page 27, this is a commentary in the Shulchan Aruch called the Darkei Tshuva. This is the Munkacha Rebbe. He's discussing a case of a child from the Rashbats, from Shimon ben Senach of Duran, much earlier, 15th century. A Tinok ben Shana, a one-year-old child whose innards kept falling out. Now, I don't know, it must have been some kind of birth defect. He describes that Yeshlo Shever, he has a break, Ulafamim Kshu Bocha, sometimes he cries, Yotzin Hameayim, his innards fall out. So I don't know what kind of circumstance, Rachmanel Itzlan.
Also, the whole organs, it might just be an umbilical hernia.
Something is happening that...
Stays in a little bit, and then when he
coughs or whatever, exactly.
Comes out with the peritoneal covering.
And that's, and then he says they have to go to a brofe mumche, and then they have to put it back in. The question was, can he undergo some kind of risky procedure? And here again, the Rashbat says that it is permitted. So we have multiple cases over different time periods and different scenarios.
Where is he living?
The Rashbats, yeah. Rav Shimon ben Senach of Duran, 15th century.
Oh, yeah. Pretty risky, dude.
15th century going into the 16th century. His father was the Tashbates. Very important rabbinic Sephardic family of Poskim.
Why aren't we asking the question simply about your lettuce?
Ah, beautiful. So if Moshe Feinstein has an achuva that's not in this packet, he says that a yoledes, a woman who's going to give birth, is in a different category. Because the sakana of leda, he says, is a different kind of sakana. That's a natural sakana that God built into the world. So every woman who goes into labor is in some kind of danger, although there is a question in halacha whether or not a woman who delivers should say a berachas hagomel. Depends how unusual, how risky, how dangerous, how nervous she was. But Rav Moshe says that that's a sakana, what he calls a sakana tivis. He has that in a different discussion about contraception. So Rav Moshe says there that it's not the same kind of sakana, because obviously the Rabbono Shalom put in a special hashgacha, so to speak, a special... that's the normal way of the world, that's a natural consequence. As opposed to these, which are unnatural diseases, obviously, they're different circumstances. Yeah, Doc?
I mean, all three of these cases, they were talking about, you know, last-ditch choices that people are making, but I think there's a difference between this and the case we're talking about, or the case in the Supreme Court. I don't think any of these cases would say that, well, just because someone out there says, I have something that can work. These are all roping mumchim who are saying, here's something that maybe what else we can try.
Right. Excellent. So
potential charlatan or, you know.
Yeah, so that's for sure got to be put into the cheshbon, that it can't just be some random person who calls on the telephone, 100%. But the other question that you're starting to bring to the fore here, which is, well, all these cases are talking about those, you know, far along, you know, like in this, that one case it said it would die in a day or two. Well, how far along? What's Chayisha? Let's say the person's going to live, the doctor says he's going to live 3 weeks, and he might die on the operating table today. So is 3 weeks, is that Chayisha? We should sacrifice Chayisha of 3 weeks? Right? How long? And then how risky is the procedure? So these are, I think, the next questions that we need to look at. So what is Chayisha? So if you look on the next page, and page 28, on the bottom, also still here in the Darkei Tshuva, from Munkach, he quotes from the Chochmas Shlomo. You see on the bottom, I put that underline where he says, Chayisha lo Chayishin. He says, I don't know, how long is Chayisha? How long is this period of time? Would you like a packet?
Oh, no.
He says, I am Bagos Chochma Shlomo Sha'omar al HaMechkar. He was doing some research. I'm on the bottom of page 28 in the underline. Kilon Isparish Kama Hu Ashir Shal Chayisha. I don't know how long that is. Like, imagine, you take somebody, the doctors say he has 3 years to live. But if he does a very risky procedure, he might die on the table, he might live for 10 years. So is he allowed to undergo a procedure right now if he's going to live for 3 years? So is that Chayisha? That sounds like a little bit far-fetched. Right? Obviously, we're not talking, this might not be talking about the situation where a person has, God forbid, an illness that's going to deteriorate, that if they don't intervene now, it's going to cause in 3 years, you know. Let's talk about just all things being equal. So he says, he makes the following suggestion. He says, Don't tell me if he dies in a year or two, that's chayisha. Everybody's going to die at some point. So what do you determine is temporary life? And what do you say is quote-unquote permanent life or long-term life? So on the top of the next column, he suggests the third line down in the second column, because of de meha de kaimelon trefa, a sick animal, ein achaya yud beis chodesh, doesn't live 12 months, mukach de chol she'eno yachol lichyos machmas choli ze yud beis chodesh, v'sofo lomos mecholi ze, bzu besoch yud beis chodesh, lo nechshav chayav. He wants to suggest an interesting analogy. One could poke holes in this analogy to the concept of trefa. What's a trefa? A trefa usually it refers to animals, but also could refer to people. A person, or in this case, primarily it's an animal, that has a certain type of disease or a certain type of medical condition. The Gemara has a whole list of trefas, and the Gemara has a discussion. An animal that has a trefa, will it die or will it live? How long will it live? It has some kind of illness. So the Gemara has a conclusion. A trefa, an animal that's categorized as a trefa, which we're not going to deal with what that is right now, it won't live for more than 12 months. And therefore, it has certain halachic ramifications for right now. One of which is that you can't eat it. If you sheft it, it's not kosher. So the Chochmah Shlomo says, well, maybe that's a model for us to look at. If the person will live for 12 months, so then maybe that's a good chai olam. That's called he's going to live. But if he's going to live less than 12 months, so maybe in that case, that should be called chai isha. And then we would permit a risky procedure to live beyond that. So that's one benchmark. Was that a hand? Oh. So that's one benchmark that we see from this source, and a similar argument is introduced kind of on the opposite side by Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva that we'll see a little bit later, that 12 months is a good benchmark. Meaning, let's say the opposite side. Let's say someone, the doctor says, is going to die in 2 days. But we could do a risky procedure and he'll live for 2 weeks. So what would that be? Would that be permitted? No. Joel's shaking his head, no. That's I agree. Why? Because it's not going to benefit Chaye Olam. According to this calculation of 12 months, Meir Vachta, yes, you've given him another 12 days. Yeah, 2 days into 2 weeks is 12 days. But he may die right now. The question is temporary versus quote-unquote permanent. So if we take benchmark number one, 12 months is the way to go. That's one way of looking at it. There is a different way of looking at it, though, and it's not going to be necessarily just 12 months. And that is on the next page, in Shilos and Tuvas Achiezer. This is a very important person to meet. I remember, I think we mentioned him just in passing last time. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzensky, the chief rabbi of Vilna, who died in 1941, just before the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, came. He was still under the Soviet rule. So he was essentially the leader of European Jewry after the death of the Chavetz Chaim, I think it was 1933. And he published a series of tshuvas called Shilos and Tshuvas Achiezer that are very important tshuvas for poskim today. He was responsible for many, many important halachic rulings. And here he has a tshuva in Chelek Yoredei Simet Tezayin Os Dalid regarding this question on page 29. Bechol levaharofim amumchin omrim ki belo. Anybody know how to pronounce that Yiddishized word on the second line of Os Dalid?
Operation.
That's it?
Operation.
Operation. Nituach in the brackets. But in Vilna it was called an operation. He says, Lo yichye yoser mi shisha chadashim. So this person, his terminal illness is 6 months.
If he gets the operation.
No. If he doesn't get the operation, he's going to last 6 months. If he gets the operation, he's going to last much, much longer. So now, Rav Chaim Ozer introduces not just a one-year kind of frame. It could be even less. And he introduces an argument which is kind of where it's going to be kind of open-ended. If you look where I put the underline, V'hasvar pshuta, de'ein chiluk bein chai shol lizman muat shol yom o yomayim o ezeh chadashim. It doesn't matter if it's a few days or a few months. But now we have a little bit of, again, a framework. Whether you follow the Chochmas Shlomo's 12 months or the Achiezer's a few months, however much that is, 6 months, could be he would give you more than 6 months. But if a person has this diagnosis from medical experts that they're not going to last longer than this short period of not just a few days, but even a few months, then we can already start talking about the permissibility of the risk. It's interesting because that original tshuva, that original comment of the Gilyon Maharsha of Shlomo Eger on the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, he said, Zman Ma. Zman Ma. Well, I don't know what Zman Ma is. So that's why we have this line of the Achiezer that the doctors can get a sense. I assume also, doctors, they're very wonderful, but they're not prophets, right? They can't say with certainty whether the person will die in 2 weeks or 4 weeks, right? They could say they'll die within a couple of weeks or a couple of months. So they don't need to have that certainty to be able to invoke the heter of undergoing this dangerous medical procedure. Well, we just said that you're allowed to undergo a dangerous medical procedure. Well, how dangerous? How dangerous? What's the likelihood? Like you said, so one in a million? You're going to do something that's one in a million, but the guy might die on the table. So in this same tshuva, the Achiezer quotes a sefer that I never heard of called the Mishnas Chachamim. The Mishnas Chachamim, he paskins on the bottom where I put the second set of underlines in paragraph Ulam. Ubesefer Mishnas Chachamim Nistapek, he was unsure about the same shayla. Vehel Hashem Ditzorach Shiyah Safek Hashakel. What's a suffix hashakel? 50-50. Wow. That's a very high bar. That means that the surgeon has to say there's a 50% chance of success to allow him to undergo this situation, this dangerous procedure. If we go back to the original Gemara of the murderous doctor, it's not a guarantee that the guy is going to kill the patient, but it's, let's say it's 50-50. So if this is the case, then a lot of the surgeries that we're talking about, as you go further in the more desperate situations, they're going to get more and more problematic.
So is this an additional criteria?
Well,
because, I mean, 50-50, you say 50% is enough if you're going to live 2 days without the surgery, and there's a 50% chance with the surgery you're going to live 6 months. Or is he saying, if it's 6 months you're going to live without the surgery, then we want a 50-50, then you're going to live X amount more?
So I think the answer is that this is the barometer for the Mishnas Chachamim of what is considered a permitted procedure.
Period.
When is a procedure going to be permitted? That's when you've defined, you have Chai Isha and Chai Olam, which Chai Isha means he's only going to live, let's say, up to a year, but that definition could be worked on, and if the surgery goes well, he will live, let's say, beyond a year, maybe, and certainly beyond a year, like 2 or 3 years. So if you have your data of what is Chai Isha, his maximum terminal life expectancy is X, and the potential benefit is much greater, then it's permitted if there's a 50% success rate. Yeah.
I would have understood that to mean that not that there's a 50% chance of success, but that there's not a 50% chance of immediate death.
Right, okay.
Well, because they're not the same, right?
What do you mean?
I mean, you could have the surgery not die, but also it didn't work.
Like, okay.
You survive the operation,
oh, okay,
you're
great.
Still not going to live another surgery.
Great, okay, I didn't think of that angle. Right. Meaning he won't die immediately, but it wouldn't be...
It didn't help him anyway.
He
tried, it didn't work.
Great. Which we'll get to in a little bit, but just because, you know, if you get an A for effort, and that's also permitted. Right, if a person is not allowed to undergo an elective procedure for no reason, but if there's a constructive purpose, Rav Moshe writes in a different tshuva, there he's discussing actually a woman who was asking about an elective cosmetic procedure, and because she was suffering some deep emotional angst from what she was looking like, so he said that's not a violation of the Isra of Chavolah, so he permitted her to go for this elective cosmetic surgery.
It actually looks like, if you read it, that it is saying the risk of immediate death.
Right, meaning, exactly.
Like she'll move me up.
Right, but if what Dr. Katzman is saying is, let's say there's a 30% chance he'll die, 20% chance of nothing, and 50% chance he'll live. Or 30% chance he'll die, 50% chance nothing will happen, and 20% chance he'll live. So then go for it.
Right.
He's concerned about the suffix of death.
And that's
right.
What it seems
right.
To be saying.
Yes.
With the quote.
Exactly.
Suffolk is if there's a greater than 50% chance that he's going to die right away, then you can't do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But other poskim are not as machmir. So Dr. Abraham Steinberg, who some of you may have heard of, he's a very important person in the field of medicine and halacha in Israel. He's involved in a lot of different things, and he edited, he wrote the Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rufuit, the Encyclopedia of Jewish Medical Ethics. So Dr. Steinberg quotes Mipi HaShmur from Rav Yashiv, who had a lower threshold. He said even if it's a 30% chance that it will be successful, and 70% chance, the assumption here is the 70% chance that he might die on the table. But because you have your Chai Isha versus your Chai Olam, you have another barometer. So take a look on the next page. What you see here, we're not going to go through the whole thing inside because of time constraints. Pages 30 and 31 is one of multiple tshuvas where Rav Moshe deals with this and has the same ruling that it's permitted to sacrifice this temporary life for the purpose of something longer lasting. And then on page 32, you have another tshuva, which we're not going to get to. So go to page 33, because we're going to be running out of time otherwise, where we have an essay from Rav Schechter, which gives a third category for this, for the way to look at this. Until now, we've looked at it as, well, what is chayesha? What is a temporary life? So we said a couple days, 6 months, maybe up to a year. What is longer term? Maybe more than a year, something like that. And how risky? 50% risk, 30% risk. Rav Schechter has a slightly different way of looking at it regarding a different but related question. And this is the she'ela. Chole b'machane anusha hamesarev tipol refui. God forbid a person who has a terminal illness, who wants to decline medical help. Betoano, in his claim, she'eno rotze lizbol kolkach, he doesn't want to suffer anymore. V'shetov lo mavas mechayim, and he's better off, he just would rather live out the last few days of his life as is, and not undergo the procedure that would have suffering with it. Ha'im over b'zeh mishum v'nishmartim. So I'll reiterate the caveat that I mentioned the last time, which is these are shailas that need to go to a posik, to a Rav Mufak, not to a discussion in a shir, not to someone like me who's not a posik. You need to ask these shailas to a posik. But this was the question, and he gets these kind of questions. So he begins the discussion on this topic, and then moves to our discussion, which I think is very important in terms of defining, well, what is a reasonable risk. So take a look on the left-hand column. I'm skipping all the way to the left-hand column, where the second to left-hand, where the paragraph starts, V'dugma l'gimol chidlukim hanal. You see, I'm on the third column towards the top. And Rav Schechter says, you know what? There are three kinds of operations, three kinds of situations of danger. Matzinu le'inyan din safik pikuach nefesh. Dekaimalon, we have a tradition. We don't follow the rove. If a person has a chance of saving a life, even if it's a 1% chance, even if it's a 0.5% chance, you go for it. We spoke about this last time. The Chasam Sofer said, one in many thousand, sheshum adam lo yachosh lezeh, that nobody's worried about this, lo mikri safik sakana. That's not a concern. Skipping the parentheses. I'm now 10 lines down. If you have a very, very far-fetched concern that nobody's worried about, then that's not called a safik sakana. You don't have to worry about that. That's what we said, for example, Shomer Psalm Hashem. You don't have to worry about it. People walk in the street. Somebody, God forbid, gets killed in the street. Doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about it. But then you have the opposite side, which is somebody who everybody knows it's a dangerous practice. It's 80% the person's going to die. That's obvious. He says, now, V'heicha d'leika umdana d'muchach, lo letzad zeh v'lo letzad hasheni. In a case where it's not clear, there isn't universal agreement, that we could say that anybody who argues with this is a fool, it It is up to the patient, the person themselves. Shel ha'adam hamutal besakana. That the person who is themselves in the situation of danger. She'im u'choshish l'miyot hazeh, oz mikri safek sakana. If he himself is worried about it, then that's called a sakana for him. And similarly, ve'im hu ba'atmo eino choshesh, oz amrinan shomer psalm Hashem. Says Rav Shechter, there are different kinds of cases. You have one kind of a case where the halacha is, he quotes it earlier, someone doesn't want to take medication. They have a condition where all they have to do is take, they're totally healthy, they're 40 years old, completely healthy, something happens to them, they have to take two Advil. If they take two Advil, the doctor says they'll live another 80 years. If they don't take the two Advil, they might die. And the guy says, I don't like Advil. So what do? You slap him. You strap him down and you give him the Advil, like it or not. That's what you do. You give him the medication. Obviously, you try to do it in the nicest way possible, but Rav Moshe Paskins, there are times, and this is Paskin in earlier sources, later sources, sometimes you have to give medication against somebody's will, because obviously it's irrational. It's an irrational decision not to take two Advil to save the rest of your life. And same thing the other way. A guy walks in and he says, I met somebody on the street corner who offered to operate on me. I got a Groupon for open heart surgery. So then you say, you know, that's batla daito. You don't buy our open heart surgery on Groupon from somebody who's not licensed. That would be an isser. But what about an in-between stage? How dangerous is called dangerous? So Rav Shechter says, and he quotes it from the Chazon Ish, so I Xeroxed it for you on the next page. The Chazon Ish has a discussion here in, it's actually in the biography of the Chazon Ish called the Pe'er Hador, where he's discussing issues of Pikuach Nefesh. It starts on the bottom of footnote 86, and then turn over to page 35, where the Chazon Ish says, and he quotes from the Chafetz Chaim, and we're not going to read the footnote inside for purposes of time, but you can take a look at it later. It depends on the person's level of bitachon. The patient actually has, in this area of halacha, the autonomy, according to Rav Shechter, and again, in consultation with the Rav, to figure out what is considered dangerous for them. How concerned are they about the level of risk? So whereas the Achiezer quoted from the Mishnah's Chachamim that it's a 50% koveya, whereas we said in the name of Rav Yashiv that it was a 30% koveya. Now we're saying it actually may be a moving target depending on the person. The person themselves, the patient, may be able to say, look, I want to take that level of risk. I'm not so worried about it. I'm willing to accept upon myself a larger level of risk, and vice versa. They also might be able to say they only want to take a lower level of risk. So some of it, according to Rav Shechter, is actually, the halacha will say it depends on the person's own situation. And that's where he takes it further in the beginning part of the tshuva, where in his opinion, again, we're only looking at his opinion right now, there are other opinions who differ, his opinion would also take into consideration this set of, this framework for the person to be able to refuse treatment. Obviously not talking about euthanasia, not shortening a person's life, but deciding not to lengthen a person's life for the purpose of just lengthening their life, even though every moment of life is sacred, it doesn't mean that you have to lengthen it.
It's prolonging.
Because. Death. Oh, so this is where he would say similar cheshbon. The same way that you're allowed to risk your own life, well, obviously these two pieces are connected. Risking your own life and not prolonging your life go hand in hand. And if we're saying that the question of how much risk you're allowed to take is up to you within a certain range, so similarly, how much treatment you want to pursue would also be up to the patient within a certain boundary.
Is it up to the patient on both sides of the danger equation? In other words, the risk that they're willing to take, and also how they view the risk of doing perhaps nothing. In other words, is that up to the patient as well? Or
what do you mean when you say the risk of doing nothing?
So meaning, we were talking before, and I don't know if this is included, but you know, they have to be in the situation of chayasha.
Right.
Right. So, but let's say that they're not in that situation, but you know, they've got some disease that
perfect.
They could live with for a number of years, but they want to do this procedure because they can't live with the idea of having that particular thing hanging
over
them.
So that actually brings us to the next point. Rav Moshe deals with that in the next tshuva. In the earlier tshuva that I cited, that we didn't go into inside, but it's actually here on page 36. That's his perfect segue. Rav Moshe cites a case where a person is lying in bed. Here, I put in the bracket on page 36 exactly that case. Im yishkav b'mita v'lo yelech. The person would be bedridden. I'm on page 36, second line of the bracket here. Yochol lichyos od kamashan im belin lituach. He can live bedridden for a few more years without a surgery. Elosha ayideh ani tuach yichya osan hashan im belo tzar v'yuchal leilech ulehisasik b'chol davar kamo od kolodam. He could live a normal life. Rav Moshe says, Pashat la'aniyaz daiti sha'osar lasos nituach shu b'sakana. He says it's prohibited. However, there is a Mor Uktzia. The Mor Uktzia is written by Rav Yaakov Emdin, the son of the Chacham Tzvi, who was the author of the Shilas and Tshuvas Yaivitz. So on the next page, this is an early edition of the Mor Uktzia, just so you get the flavor of it. All right, maybe it's not the easiest thing to read, but this Mor Uktzia is the commentary of Rav Yaakov Emdin on the tour, on Rav Yaakov ben Asher, the kind of the precursor of the Shulchan Aruch in the four sections, where he has the following comment. He says, Yesha bochurim besafek nefashos kedei lahatzel atzmam miyisurim kashim. He says, there are some people who choose to take a dangerous procedure. Now, he's living in Altona in the 18th century, so I assume surgery in the 18th century in Altona was somewhat risky just in and of itself. Ka'osan shemosrin atzon lachtoch. They're going for surgery. Mipnei even shebikis ubegid, which I assume meant kidney stone. Even shebikis ubegid, right? That's a kidney stone. The chatzatz hakloyos, a splinter in their, I don't know how they knew there was a splinter in their kidneys. Hakoev osan umaod bitzar koshe. Kamoves Rachman Litzlan, and says the Mor Uktzia, Ula Eile, for these people, Menichin Osan Lasos Bechevtsam Kechevtsam Bali Moche. You don't protest. You don't stop them. Machmas Shekama Pa'amim, sometimes, No Shoim Venirpim, sometimes the surgery works. Mikol Mokom Ho Alulim Yesh Lahem Lochush La'atzman. He says, they should really be careful for themselves, meaning it's not recommended. Halachically, he wouldn't prescribe it for someone, but he's saying you shouldn't protest. Well, why not? It doesn't make sense. If they're doing something dangerous, shouldn't you protest? So Rabbi Lezer Yehuda Waldenberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the author of a massive multi-volume set of tshuvas called Tzitz Eliezer, he only died a handful of years ago, he suggests, in the last page, in 38, he suggests that the pshat in this Mor Uktzia is that maybe what he means is that since the person is in such agony, we know that in halacha, a person is in terrible distress, it may hasten their death. Right, that's why we have to worry about the emotional state of people who are in the hospital or such a thing, not to give them shemati tarif daito. You have to be there to talk to them and nurture them emotionally, give them support, and not to disrupt their psyche. So he says maybe that's what the Mor Uktzia is saying, that if the person is in this terrible psychological state that they're suffering endlessly, so maybe the surgery, that there's an element of refuah which is involved. So that question that you're raising, Rav Moshe says unequivocally is a no-go. But, now, the Tzitz Eliezer does not paskin like this Mor Uktzia, but at least there's a source that's out there that maybe would consider palliative measures a reason to engage in a somewhat risky procedure. But let's go back one step. If it's a palliative procedure that has a very low threshold of risk, once you get below a certain risk, which we spoke a little bit about last time, then you say Dashu Bei Rabim. Everybody does that procedure. You know, even though, let's say, a person has a cataract, so there's some risk of having a cataract procedure done, but it's done all the time. So they're doing it because they want, it's not, as far as I know, I don't know, I should ask my father-in-law, he does cataract surgeries all the time. I don't think a person who has a cataract, is that a dangerous situation that they're in?
They're driving and they can't see.
Okay, fine.
Driving, yeah.
They're not driving. So let's assume it's not. They're not driving. They're taking the bus. They live in Yerushalayim. They don't have a car. So there's no medical reason. Rav Moshe would say you couldn't do a risky medical procedure for that. But a cataract procedure is so low that it gets into the category of Dashu Bei Rabin. It's, you know,
people who have other medical conditions that would put them at higher risk for the procedure.
Bam! Then that becomes a big question. If they have this higher risk factor from the other things, then their cataract surgery becomes more of a question. Then you're going to balance what the benefit is and how risky it is. Is it in a Dashu Bei Rabin that people do it even with that level of risk? And then, similarly, Rav Shechter would say, well, does it come into a... It's not an insignificant risk, but maybe it comes into a risk category where the patient themselves says, I'm not so worried about that. And in that case, then Rav Shechter would say, perhaps that would also be permitted. Not for frivolous matters, but...
There's also the tzar component. There may not be a medical risk to a cataract, but someone who can't see...
Has an element of... Exactly. And that's something you'll see, by the way, Rabbi Bleich. On the last page, I gave you just a couple of more essays if you want to read more about this topic. Rabbi Bleich has a little bit of a different calculation, not so much in terms of numbers of years of life, but in what he calls... he doesn't call it quality of life. He calls it life quanta. I guess if you're a law professor, you like to use fancier terms. But he looks at it not so much in terms of number of months, but like you said, in terms of tsar. So that also figures into the equation. So the issue of compulsory surgery is kind of another discussion. And the issue of refusal of medical treatment is another discussion. That's not the topic tonight. But I brought that piece from Rav Shechter because it illustrates this idea that the question of risk is sometimes objective, but sometimes subjective. And that the cheshbon of chai isha versus chai olam and how risky the procedure is sometimes will actually depend on the person and how nervous they are and how confident they are and how worried they are and how they feel about entering into this risky procedure. Now, if we didn't have the story in the Gemara, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. But we saw there is a strong basis in principle for allowing a risky procedure at the expense, a potential expense of chai isha, of this temporary life. And then it's just a question of, you know, every circumstance is different. And that's why there are great poskim. And as I've asked Rav Schwartz Shlita about these kind of things, he says he always says the rabbi has to speak to the doctor. Because the doctor has to give the most current, readily available information so that they can make the best, most informed decision. Without that, you can't get to first base. But I hope that we got a sense of how, at least for me, it's amazing to see how timeless the halachic literature is. The Torah HaKadosh is all the way back from the stories in the Nevi'im that it could be pertinent to everyday life and practical medical situations that come up all the time. It's just a hafochba v'hafochba dekulaba. We have to always come back to the learning to keep growing in these areas. So, any last questions? Yes.
He probably doesn't do this, but how would you put together the two children we talked about from Rav Moshe? One that we just read, and the other one about the woman who needs cosmetic surgery and is just so bothered by, you know, emotion. He says it's okay, but here he says that you're bothered by, you know, whatever your diagnosis is, but it's still not okay to do the surgery.
So the key difference is how risky the procedure is. In the case of the cosmetic surgery, the case he was talking about, he said it was very, very low risk. Very low risk. Not everyone does it all the time. Masharein Kane, in this case, he's talking about a surgery here that may end up that the person will die on the table. So once you're entering into that suffix sakana, you're not allowed to throw yourself into that pikuach nefesh, even though it's for the removal of the tsar, that the person shouldn't be bedridden.
And that suffix sakana is... based on some percentage that we didn't necessarily define. Maybe it's 50%, maybe it's 30%.
Exactly. Or maybe it's Rav Shechter's point of some moving target as well. But the principle of the matter, Rav Moshe says, would not be permitted for a palliative reason to engage in what we would call a risky, halachically a risky procedure. Okay? Yasher Koach. Thank you, everybody, for coming back. Nobody got spooked out after the first time. Imirtz Hashem.